And we are funded by the... Whoops. Hello, everyone. Hello again. We may be having some technical difficulties. Sorry about that. But we're live now. I'm not sure when we started, but we're live now, and you're listening to Bill Knauer, and this is Author to Author. And, well, I'm just going to skip the intro. I'm going to jump right in. Today's guest is Kirby Larson. Now, it just so happens that young adult author Kirby Larson was scheduled to be on the show about 5 or 6 weeks ago, but she had some technical difficulties. As it turns out, those technical difficulties were that she forgot to call into the show. But as I will explain to Kirby once I get her on here, that did not work out so badly. And it's very funny because Kirby is exactly the opposite of the kind of person you would expect to ever forget to do anything. She is such an on-time, do-the-right-thing, spell-the-word-correctly kind of person that I know it was horrible for her to know that she'd forgotten to call in. And the letters I got from her, the emails I got from her after the show were just hilarious for how completely she abased herself. And I'm glad that she did not just end her life completely out of shame and that she was able to join me and that she's with me now. So welcome to Author Kirby.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you. Feeling very humble today, calling you.
No need. You know, it's a funny story. Would you like to hear about what happened that day and why I think maybe you're not 100% responsible for forgetting to call me, that psychic forces might have been at work in all of this? So I recognized with about 30 seconds to go that you might not call, and I thought, oh, my goodness, what am I going to do? And I thought, you know what? I'm going to freeform it. I'm just going to see what happens because I like one of the things I do, one of the many hats I wear is I'm a public speaker, and although I do prepare some of my lectures, I would really prefer just improvising them, essentially. That's where I'm most comfortable is just stepping up to the podium and seeing what's there. And so I've been wanting to do that but have been afraid to do it. I've been afraid to really take that chance because it's one thing to write without an outline. It's another thing to speak live without an outline. And so by you forgetting to call in, you provided me an opportunity to do just what I had been wanting to do, which was to speak extemporaneously for a long period of time. And it went very well. And that gave me the confidence to go on and do it live. So what do you think of that? Maybe I was psychically preventing you from calling me. I take full responsibility.
Or the other thing, the other thing was I was so immersed in a revision that I truly lost track of time, which does happen to writers, but they should never agree to interviews when they are in the midst of trying to finish a manuscript for a deadline. So
and
I've learned a very valuable lesson.
Well, what a perfect excuse for a writer. And also, I might add, you were away from home, weren't you? You were at your, like a summer house, is that right?
Yeah, we have a little beach house,
yes.
Which is a very relaxing place to write. And very few distractions. So that was another complicating factor. I truly was just in the zone. And I'm sure you've had that experience yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And I bet other people who are writing have had the same experience where you don't even know that time has passed.
But isn't that the goal? I mean, isn't that the ultimate goal? I mean, I know we want to get published and we want to make a lot of money and we want a lot of people to read our work. But isn't that experience of becoming so immersed in the work that you forget what time it is, that you become lost, that you sort of leave your physical body almost, isn't that one of the best payoffs of this work that we do?
Right. I would say it's a great payoff. I don't know if I would 100% say it's a goal because I think for me when I'm writing, my primary goal really is to understand the character that I've created and the world I've put her in and how she might respond to certain things. And so I think a byproduct of that is when you get totally engrossed in, puzzling how, like the Rubik's Cube, shifting things around, then you do sort of transcend yourself or transcend time. But I think if we set that as a goal, it might we'd always be going for that rush. And that, you know, I mean, it'd be interesting to do a study to see how much of a writer's time or any creator's time is in that zone and how much of it is in the prep to get us to be able to be in that zone. You know what I'm saying? So
now when you say prep, are you – I'm trying to remember from, because we, for our listeners who don't know, I had the privilege of interviewing Kirby, and you can watch that interview on Author Magazine, about 2 years ago when you released The Fences Between Us, which was an excellent YA book about, it had to do with, it took place in America during the time of World War II. It involved Japanese internment camps and Americans. And I can't remember now, but I think you said you are a bit of an outliner, are you not?
I am not much of an outliner, but I'm a huge researcher. And so because I'm trying to put fictional characters in actual historical events, you do have a sense of what the range of possibilities are for a story situation. So, for instance, in that, I felt most comfortable having a Caucasian main character, but, you know, looking at how she would bump up against those events, and I actually was able to use a real person, Reverend Emery Andrews, who moved with his family to Twin Falls, Idaho, to help continue to minister to his congregants who were in the Minidoka war relocation camp there. So I was sort of able to use that as a shape. So in a sense, the historical events give me the shape, but I'm really a terrible outliner, at least for my early drafts. Usually when I'm kind of like, okay, now I have a sense of who this person is and what they would do in the story, I often step back then and kind of do... outline isn't even the right word. It's more, I really love using note card, like the old-fashioned 3x5 note cards to sketch out scenes and orders. And I'm a terrible example of an outliner.
Now, but you see, now this is so funny. This is a common point of view for non-outliners. There's a sort of guilt around it. I was just interviewing Emily Giffen, who writes... I guess it's sort of women's fiction. She wrote Something Borrowed and Something Blue, I think. And she also does an outline, and she was scolding herself for it. And outliners never scold themselves for needing an outliner, but non-outliners will scold themselves for needing to outline. And you mustn't. You mustn't do it because
you're right.
Because there is no right way to do it. I don't outline, and it only screws me up when I try. But I do, and like you're holding stuff in your head. You know what you're trying to say. You have a sense of where you're going. And as you're outlining, I'm sure your writer plotting muscle is seeing the little lights of events that could possibly be connected one after the other, yes?
Right. And I think that's why there are so many different styles of writing, because, you know, just we're individuals, we're people, we're not machines. I, in one small part of my life, I shouldn't say small part, but I have co-written some nonfiction picture books with a very dear friend of mine, Mary Nethery, and Mary and I could not be farther apart on the preparation spectrum. She really is a plotter, really works off the three-act structure, that, you know, identifying the turning points and that sort of thing. And I think for me it's a more emotional process. And again, I get back to when I feel like I really know a character, I'm going to know what he or she is going to do in a certain situation, or at least, a limited number of choices that for that situation. The novel that will be coming out in February is really interesting because it's the first time I've revisited a character. It's actually a sequel to the novel Hattie Big Sky, and it is called Hattie Ever After. And so I had a known character and a beloved character. Trust me, I get all these letters from people who, you know, want to know what's next for her. And so that was a little bit even scary because I still had a sense of what might be happening next for her. But then I had that layer of, oh, I've got all these readers out there with expectations about what she should do or what they want her to do. But I still had to stay true to what I felt that character would do. So, you know, for me, I just, that's my compass. That's my roadmap, is, you know, just getting to know that character as deeply as possible. And I will say, for me, it's not doing those character inventories or character sketches.
Right, yeah.
I like to have a visual. I can often look for an old photograph. I always rummage in junk stores for photographs or letters or postcards, and so I love to have an image. But mostly it's just writing that character into situations and trying to understand how he or she would react.
Yeah, you know, it's such a, you know, there's a lot of, obviously we've got to learn our craft, and there's a lot that goes into what is craft, from plotting to having characters speak in a way that is both economical, because you can't actually, you couldn't, if you transcribed an actual conversation, it would be just very boring and endless in a way, very long compared to what appears in a in work of fiction, and so, and of course, description and all the rest. But there is this thing that every writer, whether doing fiction or creative nonfiction, has to learn, and it's what it, it, I think it's, for me, it's best described as when something, knowing when it clicks into place and when it doesn't. And there is no formula for what that sort of click, like, yes, the character really would do that in that, in this, in this instance. And yes, that's the, that that description captures exactly what I was feeling and wanting to convey. But you don't know what it is until it's there. At least for me, I can't know until it's there, and then it, then there is that sense of something fitting together that I didn't know fit together until I wrote it. And that is almost a muscle in and of itself. But you can't. I don't think you can teach it. I don't know how you would. It's simply either you know it works or you don't.
Yeah, I wrestle with that because I did teach writing for some years, and I taught in the community college, and so first, and a lot of my students would were people who had wanted to write as younger people, but you know would take English classes and get their papers back with all the red on it, you know, and that totally intimidated them, and. I mean, not that everyone is going to write to be published, but I do think there is something that can be taught, to the, like the discipline or the pushing below the cliches. But, yeah, that little snap into place, I think it comes from practice, and I think many people are not willing to practice enough to begin to recognize that. You know, there's, I get so many people who say to me, what do you do? Oh, you write? Well, I've always wanted to write a book. Like, you know, you just sit down one afternoon and, you know, pour yourself a cup of tea and you write the book. And they have no concept that it
is
hours.
Anybody really thinks that, but clearly some people do.
No.
How can you look at a book and think, how can you look at all those words, you know, just your volume and think, I mean, everybody's tried to write a letter and they know how long that takes.
Well,
but,
and
all
I
right,
will
yes,
say,
somebody
I,
thinks
my,
that.
Right, my, the characters in my stories are usually children or young adults, and so I'm kind of lumped in that child YA literature, and so people often assume that that is somewhat easier than writing for adults. When in fact it is incredibly more difficult, in my humble opinion. But both types of writing have their challenge. But I do think that people don't realize that it really is like practicing an instrument or getting better at a sport. You know, it's really funny. Just because we can all use a computer and put sentences together, we have this expectation that anyone could write, but we wouldn't expect someone to be able to perform brain surgery after doing a few, you know, writing a few pages. So there is a weird little disconnect in our culture.
Well, there is something different about writing from all of the other arts, I think, with the possible exception of acting, because people can be very good, very fast at acting, especially at a young age in a very weird way, where it just comes very easily because they know how to speak and they know how to improvise. They maybe have been acting in their life, but one of the interesting things about writing is, unlike, say, the piano, or I taught myself to compose music. So learning to compose music is a set of skills you simply don't learn in your everyday life unless you learn about music theory and what a chord is and so on. But everybody at least knows how to write. You know what I'm saying? I mean, everybody has probably gone to school and is literate enough that they could write. And so they have the foundational skills, but they may not have the foundational skills for how to paint with perspective or like how to play a scale on the piano or any of the other arts with, or even like or do ballet, which requires so much discipline just to even begin. But I think part of the reason we see so many of these self-published novels or indie-published is everybody has a computer and everybody can at least write, you know, without necessarily the knowledge
together,
of the whole, all that is required to really make a book come together.
Right, right. And as we know, that, you know, involves, like, learning how to show situations, show emotions rather than tell, you know, leaving room for the reader in the story so they can actually, you know, participate in the character's journey. And I do think some of those things can be taught, but again, it's not from one workshop or one class. It's from, I mean, it could be years of writing and practicing and failing and not getting it until all of a sudden the light bulbs goes off.
Yeah. I feel like the more I learn, the more I understand how much there is to learn.
You know, and that's why I have said to people, I will never retire from this profession because, of course, I love it, but every book teaches me how little I know about writing, and there's more to learn, and it's different. You know, each book is different, has a different set of challenges and complications, and it's fresh and different every single time, and equally frustrating every single, you know, single time, too, at some points along the path, so.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I was just thinking about who's Lisa Gardner, the suspense writer Lisa Gardner, when we interviewed her, said that one of the jobs of the writer is to become comfortable with being uncomfortable. And
I like
thought,
that.
Boy, that is so true. I was just thinking about it today as going to the grocery store. And so I have this book I wrote, this memoir that I just love, and I know it's valuable, and I know people will find it valuable, but I do not know yet, my agent has gone out with it, where it will be published or if it will be published. So I don't know that, but I do know that I love the book and I'm glad I wrote it and I'm glad with the way it was written. And conversely, I also am writing another book and I know I want to write it, and I know if I can write it the way I want to write it, it'll be excellent, but I don't know yet what that book is going to look like when it's done. And some days the not knowing doesn't bother me, and some days I just drives me crazy. I wish I knew,
right.
You know, but you don't get to, and you have to get comfortable with that not knowing, because there's so
right.
much that you don't really know.
I have very dear friends who we all kind of started writing together, you know, discovered our passion for fiction at about the same time, you know, went through the early stages of the career, and they could not be comfortable with that uncertainty and, you know, have gone on to do other things because that was just a part of that whole creative process they realized was not something they could ever accept and overcome their anxiety about it. So it really is. You kind of have to just trust that it will happen again. And some days, that's why I think many of us have critique groups, because we need someone to say to us, okay, you did it before, you know you can do it again. I imagine you have interviewed Elizabeth George, and one of the things I've so admired about her, she has a wonderful book, I think it's called Write Away, and it's actually a journal of her writing, I think it's this one particular novel, now I can't remember exactly, but, you know, so she can go back and look and see, you know, oh, she hated it, or she felt totally incapable of completing a chapter or whatever, and remind herself, I've been here before, I've figured it out before, I can figure it out again.
Boy, you forget that, don't you? You forget that, because I'm right. The book I mentioned before was a kind of compacted memoir about this one experience in my life, and the one I'm writing now is again another kind of compacted memoir, and they're similar in that, you know, they're these sort of novelistic memoirs, and you know, so I'm writing this thing along, and there are days I think I am so sick of writing about myself. I don't want to put me in another. But then I went through the exact same thing in the last book. And loved it in the end, was very happy with it.
Yeah.
And I think, why did I ever do this? Why would I ever write a book about me? What a terrible idea. And I thought the exact same thing the last time. But it doesn't, it helps some, but boy, you have to get comfortable with, but this isn't part of the beauty of not knowing, that you have that moment of discovery, because it's so delicious when you find it, you know, when the thing comes together, not the whole book, but even maybe just a scene. At least for me, it's a very rewarding experience.
Right. I have found that when I'm sitting in my chair and I just start to feel really antsy and almost a physical, like, queasiness in my stomach, that and I really want to get up and go do something else, that's the time when I need to just sit put for a little bit longer, because it's like I'm really struggling with what it is that's going to come next. And if I can just, you know, handle that little feeling of uncertainty and frustration and anxiety, I will get there. And I'm just finding that more and more, like, the more squirmy I feel, the more I should stay put. I mean, and that's true for me, not necessarily true for everyone, but Ralph Keyes has a wonderful book called The Writer's Book of Hope. I think it's in that book. He alludes to this feeling of when you start to feel especially frustrated, you're probably on the brink of a breakthrough in your writing.
Yeah.
And I have certainly experienced that dozens of times.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Now, I see we have a caller, and I'm almost certain I know who it is. I'm going to get this fellow on and see if he has a question. Is this Jeffrey?
Hello, Bill. It is.
Hello, how are you doing? Welcome to Author to Author.
Another busy day in the life of a writer, which is we don't get these days off on these sick days and holidays for some reason.
No, you got to keep working. Did you have a question for Kirby?
Yes, Kirby, wonderful interview. Big fan of your work.
I asked a question of
most of those guests, if not all. Your process, you alluded to it in some regards about when you sit down, you get that queasy feeling. But do you have a particular process to prepare for when you sit down or when you're sitting there? Talked about things like outlining. What's your process? I'd be really interested in it. And thank you, Bill, for taking the question.
Oh, this is a good question. Hey, Jeffrey, do you mean what's her process every day when she sits down to work or when she's about to begin a whole new project?
Yeah, it's kind of a dual process, isn't it? It's sort of time management, which we all must do so well and hope to be able to remove all the other distractions, to be able to sit down and just get our work done.
Yeah.
And also just the process itself and whether outlining and such.
I see. Okay. All right. Good question, Jeffrey. All right. So, Kirby.
Okay.
You do a lot of research first, I'm sure.
My passion is historical fiction, and so I do a lot of research because it would be a waste of time if I created a story situation that wouldn't have been possible or plausible in the time period I'm researching. So that's where I start, tons of research. And then when I feel like I am pretty comfortable in that character's world, I sit down and start just writing about the character, and it may come in the form of talking to myself through the computer. Like, I think, you know, Hattie is going to end up in San Francisco, and I think she's going to pursue her passion for being a reporter. And this kind of writing, which would be dreadfully dull for anyone else to read, but for me, it's just talking to myself about the story. To Jeffrey's, kind of the other layer of his question, I am lucky enough that writing is my full-time job, so I write every single day. My husband, we both have offices at home, so it's a really work. I know someone else knows if I'm goofing off.
Right.
So there's sort of that little bit. And then I mentioned my good friend Mary Nethery, and we do what we call buddy checks every day. So we just send each other a short email in the morning spelling out what we hope to accomplish that day, whether it's a word count or whether it's dealing with a certain scene or finding a particular reference. And so you just kind of, it's another layer of accountability for me.
Right.
So I know Mary knows that I said I was going to do X today, and I know what her commitment was, and then we just check in with each other at the end of the day, and it's not like a guilt-blame thing, but there's just sort of, it's kind of like a to-do list, but fun because you're checking in with a friend. But I do write almost every single day. I write novels, and so if I step away for too long, it's too difficult to get back into.
You lose the thread. It's a weird thing about a novel, but you really...
Yeah.
I mean, you don't... I would say, I like working on book-length projects because of how long it takes and because there's a sense of you're sort of always in it, but one of the things I've learned not to do is when I'm done for the day working on the book, although I can still feel it and little ideas will bubble to me, I'm always better off not turning it over and over and over in my head all through the rest of the day, because I will come to hate it in a way. At least I will, because I'm not an outliner, I can't know until I'm writing it what's really going to work and what's really not going to work.
Yeah. I experience that too, but also I will have to say that I walk the dog twice a day,
mm-hmm.
and so during those walks I have not consciously thought about something, but ideas will come to me.
Yes.
So your mind is on, walking the dog or saying
hello
to the neighbor, but all
drops
of a sudden,
down, right?
You just
then
get,
the idea can come up.
Exactly.
Yeah,
the shower
is very common for people.
Right. Yeah, but I think really we have to be honest, there's no magic in the process. I have very dear writing friends who write in spurts, who do not write every day, and they're fabulous writers.
Yeah.
It's interesting to hear what other people's processes are, but it's more important to find your own and to honor it and stick to it.
I agree completely. In fact, I think one of the most important jobs writers have, after learning the basics of the craft and they're learning what their sentences sound like and so on and what their stories are like, is learning how you work. Because, unlike so many other professions, you do this is alone, and you just got to find the way that works for you. And you've got to learn how you like to tell your stories and when you like to write. I've learned it's very important for me that when I sit down to write, I expect there to be this decompression time when I leave the rest of my life and try to enter the thing I'm trying to tell, and it takes a little bit of time to sort of sink down to that layer. And
right, I think that a lot of us, you know, sit down with our cup of coffee or whatever.
Yes.
That's sort of like a physical symbol that,
absolutely,
okay, now I'm in the writing mode, you know.
I couldn't do it without that call. I don't, I mean, I could, but I'd prefer not to.
I will
and
tell you,
yes,
one,
you've got to learn
it,
how
oh,
you do it. How does Kirby,
yes,
do it? You've got to learn that.
Right. But I will tell you one thing that I bet is true for just about everybody, and that is whenever your prime writing time is, you should turn off your email, because it's too easy to get sucked into that, and you do not want to be wasting a precious half hour or hour of your of whatever limited, you know, intense writing time that you have answering these emails that could certainly wait till, you know, your lunch break or dinner break or whatever your timing is. I have found that I need to turn that off because I, as you mentioned, even though I flaked out on our first phone call, I am very, you know, if someone asks me to do something, I do it right then. I want to check that off the list. And email is just a suck away from your creativity. So I just turn mine off when I'm sitting down to work.
I think that's a good idea. I do that as well, especially when I'm sitting and working on the book. I write other things like my daily column, and I've learned for whatever reason I can leave the email on for that because it's shorter. But for the book, no, it's off. No,
right.
You know, you won't check New York Times or anything. Once I set, I'm done. It's over, and I'm in. And because you know how it is. I mean, you can re-enter it, but if you get in that flow, you really want to stay in it. You know,
right.
At least I do.
I think it's about respecting the story, and we aren't respecting the story if we're only giving it half our ear or half our heart or half our eye.
I don't think you could tell it with only half your ear anyway.
Not really. Yeah. But anyway, that's why I think those kinds of distractions. And then, of course, we all have things that enter into our lives that, you know, you just might not get your writing time that day. And that's okay too, because we're human beings and we live in the world. But
we do.
But I would say that is one habit everyone should get into, is turning off the darn email while they're working.
And I would say also that if you're wanting to start writing, I would first try to see if you can do it on a regular schedule, as that's the way most writers give themselves a schedule. But as you said, there are people who do it in spurts, and I know some of those people also, and you might be one of those. But one of the nice things about giving yourself a schedule is you are saying, however that long that time is, whether it's 30 minutes or 2 hours or 3 hours or 4 hours, for maybe sometimes all day, but whatever that chunk of time is, you're saying this time matters and it's as important as a job, even though I don't know when or if I will or how much I will get paid for what I'm doing. I want to treat it exactly as seriously as any job I've just been hired for that I want to do a good job at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a great point. Absolutely.
I think it's very important. You've got to value it. You've got to let yourself know that this is a valuable experience, and really, and most people who are writing probably live in some sort of family situation, some of roommates, but let the rest of the world know, like, this is kind of off limits. You know,
yeah.
I know I'm here.
However,
but
you need to do that. Mm-hmm. Though I will say, I have a favorite quote from Catherine Patterson, and it's she says, "The very people who have taken away my time and space to write have also been the ones to give me something to say." And I think we have to remember that. You know, we might get pulled away because it's a field trip when we need to chaperone. It's our turn. But then, you know, being with our family or our loved ones, our friends, those are the people who are going to help us find the stories that we are supposed to tell. So,
what a lovely and compassionate point of view to end on. Well, thank you so much, Kirby, for being with me today.
Great talking with you.
And thank you all for listening to our show. Next week it will be, the charming Frank Delaney. I know you're going to love it. Until then, set aside some time for yourself and do what you love. Thanks for listening. See you next time.